Moncrief on News Talk.
Time to look outwards from our beautiful island to see things happening in other parts of the world. Jonathan De Burke Butler joins us once again. Afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you getting on?
Right, Slovakia we're going to go to first. And obviously, it's a story, I suppose, that is affecting pretty much every part of the world. This is about higher fuel prices.
Yeah, so this is Slovakia, as you mentioned. And this is the story that the government there has approved a resolution permitting service stations to charge higher diesel prices for vehicles that come from foreign shores. Now, specifically, they're working off information that was given to them by the refiner Slovnaft, okay, who's basically said that up in the north of the country, so bordering Poland, there seems to be dwindling amounts of stock when it comes to diesel. And the reason they've concluded over the last few days for that is because there are people from Poland who are coming over the border and not only filling their cars, but bringing extra containers and filling those up as well.
Right,
and that's because of the price difference between the two places is quite extraordinary, right? So this crazy measure, or, well, innovative measure, I suppose, or original measure, whatever you want to call it, which was signed off on by the Prime Minister, Robert Fico, when originally the story came out last week. They said there was no upper limit to the price that these petrol stations could charge foreign cars. But then on Monday, the finance minister came in and basically said, OK, we're going to set diesel prices for foreign drivers at 183 per litre. Now, just for those people who are out there driving around at the moment, 183 per litre. So that's what, 50 cent cheaper than here, right?
Anyway,
right? So 183 per litre. And that is, they came to that price by taking average prices from surrounding countries, putting them together, and they came up with that figure. But that compares to the average diesel price in Slovakia of 153. So you can understand why the Poles were coming over. They were getting theirs for about 180 in Poland, and they were saying, right over the border, it's only 153, so let's go over there, fill up our cars and maybe bring a few containers back to our mates and see if we can make some money out of it as well.
Why is fuel cheaper in Slovakia?
I don't know, to tell you the truth. I mean, I know that they've been having trouble lately with that oil line or whatever you call it. I can't remember what the technical term is. That was going through Ukraine and was damaged. The reason the 90 million Hungary are stopping the 90 million loan. And they have, I think Hungary and Slovakia have an exemption from that embargo on Russian petrol coming in. So I think it might be cheaper. It could be for that reason, right?
Okay.
I certainly know they have, they're free of that, right? Mm. Those two countries. So that could be the reason. But anyway, this is the measure that they brought in, and it's been put in place since Monday. So
And I assume they only enforce it because they're looking at the reg on the car, and if it's not Slovakian, then you pay more.
Yeah, exactly. Now I don't know if you know if you can prove that you're Slovakian, or that you pull out an ID card and say, look, I only live down the road, but I happen to have a Polish registered car. Whether the person at the petrol pump will let you off or not, I don't know. But that's the situation at the moment.
And if so, if a Pole drives into Slovakia, how much will they have to pay per litre?
183. And the average price,
right.
And the average price is about 153.
Yeah.
In Poland, they're paying 178.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know,
it's only a few cents in the
exactly.
difference, really.
Yeah.
The US we're going to go to next. And now, an issue that we have spoken about before on this programme, which being the regulation of tanning beds. It was going to happen in the US, but now not?
Yeah, it looks like it. So this is the Food and Drug Administration. People will know them as the FDA because we spoke about them a lot during COVID because they're the ones who had to sign off on all the vaccines and the like. And speaking of vaccines, the new health minister, who doesn't really believe in vaccines, or health secretary, as they call him there, Robert Kennedy Jr., seems to be behind this reversal, right? So these proposals had come in fundamentally, they were to ban tanning beds, federal law to ban tanning beds for under 18s.
Okay.
In some states, for example, in Connecticut, I know they have a ban in place already for people under 18, but they were going to make this countrywide, right? And that proposal had been knocking around since 2015, and I don't really see why it was taking so long to put in place. But anyway, it has now been stopped, okay? And in a memo outlining that decision, Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said that the FDA was withdrawing the proposed rules because of, quote, scientific and technical concerns and possible unintended consequences. Now, when various news agencies probed a little bit further, a spokesperson from the Department of Health and Human Services, as they call it there, said the agency was reassessing, quote, how to balance public health considerations with consumer access and choice. That old American chestnut that they always roll out. So it's about access and choice as far as they're concerned. Now, in the same email, sorry, Sean, but in the same email, the FDA also said that the withdrawal of the proposed rule does not change the established science on UV exposure. Exposure to ultraviolet radiation, including from sun lamp products, is known to increase the risk of skin cancer. So they're saying that they know there's a risk there, but they don't care because consumer choice basically trumps it as far as the FDA is concerned at the moment.
Yeah, even though, but and this was, and just to reiterate, this regulation, proposed regulation, was for the under 18s,
but there was another aspect to it, which was that people who use them regularly would have to periodically sign forms acknowledging that there were risks to sun cancer or to skin cancer.
Yeah.
So I imagine that that was in place to stop them suing the state 50 years down the road, when obviously people are eventually going to take class actions against the state not intervening.
Indeed. But RFK is an interesting colour himself.
Mm-hmm. And he uses tanning beds and has admitted to doing so.
Okay.
So, because he thinks it's good for you, yeah.
Ah, right. Yeah, okay, yeah. So he kind of disputes the science about that.
He would, as well as others, although it should be said that the Indoor Tanning Association and the American Sun Tanning Association dispute the scientific evidence that exposure to UV radiation at a young age increases the risk of cancer.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they say that, you know, in general.
Yeah, they would say that, wouldn't they? Right, Nepal we're going to go to next, and they're going to get a new prime minister, a former rapper.
A former rapper. This is an individual by the name of Balendra Shah. Mm. He's now 35 years of age. Just a bit of background on this, if we have time.
Yes.
The last time we spoke about Nepal was back in September, and the reason we were looking at that was over these Nepo baby riots, as they called them, right? So this was, what was happening was that there was sons and daughters of MPs who aren't particularly well paid in Nepal were going off to these places and getting engaged in Bahrain and in five-star hotels, and were posting about their ostentatious lifestyles on Instagram or whatever social media platforms. And people began to criticise them online. And in response, the government shut down the internet, to which people went out and started protesting. Now, the result of those protests, the direct result was 77 people were killed and it collapsed the government. But then the government decided, OK, we'll go for elections. And this is the outcome of those elections.
Right.
So this 35-year-old Balendra Shah, who's the leader of the National Independent Party, which has only been around for 4 years, has won 182 seats. Now, just to put that into context for you, second place won 38 seats.
My, how many seats are there in total?
Just about 300, I think.
So it's an overwhelming majority.
It was just two seats short of the two-thirds. So if somebody wants to get a calculator out there and figure out the maths, they can. So a huge majority. So obviously there was a big desire for change there amongst the electorate. He'll be up against it, though, it has to be said. I mean, the country is not in great shape. 21% youth unemployment. I think there's about 3 million people who live abroad and work in the Middle East. Many of them might be coming back, or at least they won't be sending as much money home. If you consider they're probably working in the tourist industry and various things like that. As before. So he'd be up against it, but he has a good majority to work with here.
Yeah. Has he much political experience?
Fairly little. He's an interesting guy. I mean, an awful lot of his rap, which I'm sure you're very familiar with.
Yes, of course.
Was slagging off the government and corruption and that kind of thing. He ran for mayor of Kathmandu, which is obviously the capital city there, and he was mayor there for 3 years.
Okay.
So that's his limited experience. He doesn't talk to mainstream media. I'm not sure why. I don't know if it's a kind of a Trump thing where it's kind of, or President Trump thing where it's kind of a fake news and you're not to be trusted, or whether he gets enough through communicating online and through his social media and his own channels.
Yeah. Corruption, has corruption been a huge issue there anyway, or a perception of corruption?
Yeah, there's a very negative perception of politicians in general.
Yeah.
And there was a story from last December where five politicians were sent to prison for basically jacking up the price of a local airport by a third.
Mm.
And they benefited from it.
Yeah.
So you get stories like that. And yes, there is a perception that they seem to cream a little bit of money off the top.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, but as you say, he's got his work cut out from there, it should be said. Right, Austria we're going to next. And where bailiffs have impounded a plane.
Yeah, it's a strange one. This involves Ryanair. There's been a lot of talk on RT. There's been documentaries about Ryanair recently, which have been fairly popular. So they're in the news. Are they ever out of the news is the question, I suppose. This has happened at Linz Airport in Austria. This was a plane that was bound for London and a bailiff jumped on, apparently. Now, the airport were aware of this. And they issued a statement basically saying that there was a pending claim against Ryanair in court and that a bailiff had been instructed by the district court of the city to carry out an official act, okay? So the bailiff was accompanied onto the plane. It would have been amazing to be on that to see all of this going on. And he issued them with a seizure notice, right? It's known as a cuckoo sticker, which is basically, you know, you stick it onto the plane and saying, we're taking control of this.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, they didn't actually take control of it, right? So basically, the court was seized, all right, but it remained in Ryanair's custody and it was actually operating for, it operated that day.
Okay.
It went on its way and it has been operating ever since. But basically what they were doing here was they were saying, look, we have a notice against you. You owe us, or you owe a woman, €890. I'll explain why in a minute.
Yes.
And if you don't pay it, we're going to take your plane. Right, you can operate the plane if you sort yourself out, okay?
Yeah.
Now, the backstory to this is that there was a flight from Linz to Mallorca in 2024 that had been delayed by 13 hours. And a woman from Austria wanted her money back, basically. She was entitled to compensation for the delayed flight, but she never got it from Ryanair. So she took the case to court.
Hmm.
And the court agreed with her and said, okay, Ryanair, you owe this woman €890. They hadn't paid by the time she went back to the court and got this court order impounding the plane effectively put in place. And that's exactly what they did. Apparently, the bailiff went onto the plane and asked the crew, did they have any cash on them to clear the debt? But obviously, it being a cash-free flight, they weren't able to help him out.
Yeah,
so.
And have Ryanair said, we're going to give the woman her money?
Well,
now,
this is interesting, right? So they mentioned the fact that the plane departed and that everything was fine. And they said that the court doesn't have possession of the aircraft. They can't sell it. And they expect to receive the termination of enforcement proceedings shortly. And then the matter can be considered closed.
Okay.
But at no point did they say, we've paid the woman and now the matter can be considered closed. But I'm sure through back channels she probably
has been.
Okay,
I'm sure that's what that means.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Russia we're going to go to next and finally. And they've agreed to stop using Kenyan recruits. It seems to be an ever-widening spread of recruits that Russia are using in the war against Ukraine.
Yeah, absolutely. There's about 1,000 Kenyan citizens, in fact, that apparently have been used in the war against Ukraine by the Russians. And it got so bad that the foreign minister of Kenya, a man by the name of Musalia Mudavadi, had to go there and negotiate terms effectively with Sergei Lavrov. They both appeared in press conference after their meeting. And they confirmed that Kenyans will no longer be deployed by the Russian army in this war against Ukraine. There's a couple of strands to this. The Sergei Lavrov in a statement basically said, look, the Kenyans that came here to fight came through the correct channels and legal channels.
Okay.
He would say that. That's fine. Yeah. The Kenyan foreign minister said that he was hoping that the Kenyans that are still there, 27 of them have been repatriated already, but the Kenyans that are still there and still alive will be able to go home. He didn't necessarily lay the blame squarely at the Russians. And we know that in recent weeks and months, there have been 600 or more than 600 recruitment agencies that have been closed down. And they were suspected of helping to dupe Kenyans into going abroad and okay. getting involved in things that they shouldn't probably have been getting involved in, or, you know, weren't told they were going to be getting involved in.
Right.
So what seems to have happened here is that some Kenyans went along to these job agencies and they said, okay, we've got a great job for you in the civil service in Russia. And they said, okay, that'll be deadly. And then they end up going there and the next thing they know, they're shooting at people they have no problem
or
with.
Or being shot at. Mm. Yes, indeed. Right, okay. You'd wonder as well what kind of leverage Kenya brought to bear to make the Russians make this commitment.
That is a good question. I mean, I can't answer that question directly, but what I can say is, if you're going to Moscow to have discussions with the foreign minister in Russia, you have a relationship with the Russians.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
there's obviously something going on there. But what that is, I don't know. And what do the Russians get out of it? I don't know.
Yeah. Now, and it's not just Kenya that this is happening. This seems to be happening all over Africa.
Yeah. According to Ukrainian intelligence, they say that there's over 1,700 people from 36 countries in Africa who've been recruited to fight for Russia. 17 South Africans were repatriated in February. I think I came across that story, but I didn't bring it to you. It seems to be a bit of a thing, all right. Now, whether all of that is through agencies or whether, you know, it's through other means, I'm not sure, but it seems to be a bit of a thing.
Has Ukraine tried to do this? Because you think Ukraine is more stuck for soldiers, really, than Russia would
be. Yes, they have. Yeah. They have. In short, they have tried to recruit from other countries as well, including African countries.
What should we look out for this coming week, Jonathan?
Yeah, I think the big thing that stands out for me is this snap election in Denmark, which is being held today. So we'll get the results of that tonight, probably tonight and tomorrow.
Greenland is going to be an issue there, is it?
Huge issue. Yeah. So Mette Frederiksen has been in power. Social Democrats.
Mm.
And she's been there for 7 years. And I think the opinion polls weren't great for her before Greenland. And then when Greenland happened, she got a bit of a bump. And that's why she's decided to go for this election.
Right.
So she's expected to come back. The Social Democrats aren't expected to do as well as they have done previously, but she's expected to come back and be PM again. So that's worth looking out for. Then on Thursday, Nicolas Maduro, there's a hearing for Nicolas Maduro in New York. I don't know if he'll be there.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see what happens there and what the hearing is all about. And then on Saturday, Earth Hour is between 8:30 and 9:30. So knock off any lights that you're not using between that time.
Okie dokie. Jonathan, thanks a million.
Thanks, Joe.
As ever, Jonathan DeBurca-Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.